Fresh off a trip to India, Singapore and Indonesia, the Foreign Minister Winston Peters arrived back in New Zealand to deliver his State of the Nation speech on Sunday.
If you want to face the real world and get any respect, you better do something about pulling your weight. When you're talking to countries like India, dare I say it, Indonesia or Singapore and many others, start pulling your weight.
Kia ora, welcome to Focus on Politics. I'm Jo Moyer. China's Foreign Minister Wang Yi did a sprint through New Zealand and Australia this week, beginning in Aotearoa, holding meetings with Foreign Minister and Deputy Prime Minister Winston Peters, Trade Minister Todd McClay and Prime Minister Christopher Luxon. While trade is often front and centre of these talks, security and defence are increasingly important in the dynamic geopolitical world the Asia-Pacific region finds itself in. Mr. Peters met with Wang Yi on Tuesday, just 3 days after a tour through India, Singapore and Indonesia. India is a country the Prime Minister has promised to improve trade access with. He's expected to take a business delegation there later this year, and Mr. Peters' visit came on the back of Mr. McClay's in December. I sat down with Mr. Peters this week and started by asking him about the obvious roadblock in any free trade agreement with India, dairy.
We were lucky enough to meet some enlightened people about their future dairy needs. They include issues such as breeding and animal husbandry, and they saw, these insightful people, rather than be in competition, we could be of real assistance to them. We also saw, in terms of the kiwifruit industry, the chance for us to be engaging with them, knowing that for a full 4 month period they would not have a production line, and that's where we'd come into it. It's being more clever in that approach, and I've always suspected over a long period of time in politics that we need to do far more of that, and we're doing it now.
Where do you think the relationship is at the moment, currently, after that visit?
This is all about building relationships, and nothing will happen until we've established trusting relationships with people in India, or for that matter, elsewhere in Asia. So we went there with that in mind, a new focus, not talking about free trade agreement, so to speak, but rather talking about how we can get alongside each other, do far more for each other in ways that will help both the economy of India and, do I say it, the security issues that India is concerned about. And Jay Shankar, the Foreign Minister, said this, which is really important. He said, clearly, we're entering a new phase. Now, that's an achievement in my view, and we're going to build on it and put the flesh around it as fast as we can here in New Zealand, week by week, and before we go back next time.
What were the discussions that took place around security in the Asia-Pacific? Can you talk about any of that?
Well, not really, because I was there to ask them about their concerns, to ask them to share their concerns with us as people seriously involved, countries seriously involved with the Indo-Pacific concept. And those confidential discussions, I think I should remain that way, because they were frank and candid with us as to what their concerns were and where we might be able to help.
I mean, India shares a border with China, and there has been military competition that has taken place on that border. So what is your impression of India's current concerns when it comes to security around China and its presence in the Pacific?
Well, again, you don't have confidential discussions of this nature, then come home and refer to the essence of them. But I think it's in the public interest to know that they did share their concerns, and they also shared the other aspect of that was that there is a growing concern, not just in India, but in their neighbourhood, and that driving us to work more cooperatively together is possibly very positive news going forward.
There's a lot of talking that happens in foreign affairs that is often about the nuance and sort of talking around things to be careful about the language. Was China talked about specifically by India, or was it talking about China but in a less obvious way?
We covered a lot of subjects all the way to the issue of Gaza, Ukraine and elsewhere. And no country was separated out in that context of our discussion. It was very wide-ranging, but on issues that are very, very prominent now and of great concern now worldwide.
Do you see it as India as wanting to improve its relationship with New Zealand somewhat or partly because of that security concern around China and what that might mean as New Zealand? Do they feel like they need to be closer to New Zealand as a result?
Well, the reality is, look, we had at the beginnings of a relationship many, many decades ago, and one of our high commissioners there was highly regarded, being Edmund Hillary. But the years since that and of late, I think the circumstances have built where they were at the stage of not really trusting us or having confidence in us. We set out in this trip, and ones that are coming in the future from the Minister of Trade and others, to rebuild rapidly that confidence that we want back.
Was there anything in any of those conversations you had when you were in India about what New Zealand could be doing more, or anything about our relationship and our trade agreements with China? Was any of that raised, whether in a good light or a bad?
Well, our trade relationships with China is our business, and they respect that. And the same way as our trade relationship building now with India is the business of India and New Zealand. But we looked at a number of aspects. We looked at the fact that we can give far more certain criteria for Indian students, the second highest category here now from offshore, a much more clear, defined future and time when they're here to study and what they can do when they're here studying. We need to sharpen up all those rules so that people know back in India what they're in for. We're into export education. It has flailed of late, or fallen back of late. We want it back pre-COVID levels. So that's one of the aspects we discussed and promised that we would get those things sorted out. And we've got back here, we've already had those discussions with those ministers.
In any of those conversations you had in India, did they talk about our defence force and our contribution in the Asia Pacific around defence and whether it was perhaps lacking?
Yes, they did. And we wouldn't have got to see the National Security Advisor if he did not think we had matters to share of concern. But he was very acutely aware that the last time this country was doing a responsible job internationally of its defence force resource was between 2017 and 2020, and he even knew which party was responsible for it. So I'm walking into a room not trying to convince somebody with my words, but to say our past actions you can now rely upon.
So what does that translate to, that you are confident that there is going to be a significant boost in the defence budget? Is that what you're saying?
I'm not going to presage the budget on the 30th of May, other than to say we will not be gaining the influence and progress that we want if we don't have certain parts of our budgetary assignment clearly of a respectable level.
And has that been the message that you have received on the trips that you have done so far as Foreign Minister, that New Zealand does need to step up on defence because we're not contributing enough? Is that a constant message you are hearing from our partners and allies?
Well, we've hardly got the job. We've only been here 3 months and we're working on those issues right here, right now. But when we were in India, or did I say in Indonesia, or in Singapore, they'd all got one message clear, that New Zealand is, under the new government, open for business, and that we mean business, and that we're going to do the utmost we can to progress, whether it was India or Indonesian or the Singaporean economy. We're going to do our utmost to seriously progress our trading relationships and our wider relationships, because we are all believers in the rule of law.
Looking at the China visit, you've obviously had the Chinese Foreign Minister here this week. Did any conversations get raised in that catch-up about your visit to India? And if so, what were the sort of, without getting into the detail of it, were there any concerns or questions raised about that visit?
Well, he'd be less than what he is. He's a very experienced foreign minister. He asked me, how did it go? And we gave him the image and the facts of the progress we were making.
Anything else you can expand on that?
No. You do not advance diplomacy through a megaphone.
Well, I'd like to try. AUKUS Pillar 2, what is your view on where we are at with discussions and engagement on that issue at the moment?
We've inherited the Pillar 2 concept from the previous government, where the previous Prime Minister, being Hipkins, said he was interested to look at it seriously, and so did the Minister of Defence, Andrew Little. We've picked it up and we've worked with the Australians already on this matter by having the 2+2 in Melbourne as soon as we could after the election, and we're working on the details now as to what the shape of Pillar 2 in AUKUS might mean for us, under and around side, alongside also the Quad.
This issue of AUKUS Pillar 2 mainly because of the nuclear bit, which of course is the first pillar, which we are obviously not going to be a part of, but it does raise concerns with many New Zealanders about what that might mean if we were to get involved. Do you appreciate that sentiment, and how is this government going to be careful to not leave the public thinking that we are getting tied up in something that we have had a long-held position and stance against?
Well, we began the job of being the Foreign Minister again with a critical statement to the heads of missions from offshore about New Zealand's independent foreign policy. That was a clear statement we made, and we also emphasised how important they were to New Zealand's future progress alongside the countries they represent. Having said that, there is surely no one with their eyes open now who believes we live in a benign strategic environment. And the third thing I'd say, if you want to go anywhere in terms of trade and every other progress of measure you might have, if you don't pull your weight, if they don't look over your shoulder and see substance, then we're not going to make the progress we desperately need. And then when there's a crisis in the Pacific and we go to all these emergency levels of rescue missions, we send things that are war utilities, warships and warplanes. You can't just sit there, as some do, and think you can pick the eyes out of this. They praise us for being of enormous help around the Pacific, and yet they don't want us to have the utilities, that only the only utilities that we can, to help people in these environmental crises. That's what we need to get away as a message, that we've got to be real here. And if we don't understand that our whole trading future depends on this, then we're letting the New Zealand people down.
There's long been a concern that we're quite vulnerable when it comes to how much we rely on China in terms of our trade relationship. And whilst obviously there has been some diversification going on in recent years, we are still very dependent on China. How concerned are you about that? And what discussion did you have with the Foreign Minister that you would put in the camp of they're quite aware how much we need to them?
Well, of course they would be. I mean, my concern over the many, many years was to see people thinking that when they were dealing with China, that they were their equals. They haven't been around thousands of years because they're not clever and they don't plan hundreds of years ahead, not just as we sometimes do, only 100 days ahead. So they would understand also when we say, and they say how important we are to China's traders to us, but our trade is very important to them as well. They know. If people start starving in China, it wouldn't be long before you have a massive insurrection. One senior Chinese political leader mentioned that to me years ago. It was explained to me why they are concerned to ensure they did provision and feed their people going forward. And the Chinese GDP growth has slid from possibly well over the 5 to probably now between 4.2 and 5. They know and they recognise that they're not making the progress that they should be and will want to make. That makes New Zealand more critical to them, in my view, because it means they will be less able to supply some of the fundamentals that their marketplace needs. So it's not a measure of, how shall I say it, looking at them as some sort of begrudging way because we're so dependent upon them. It's ensuring that they do appreciate us. They express that in particular. But it's also broadening our markets. But that's an issue that I was arguing since the early 2000s, you recall, when others were saying we should put all our eggs in one basket, which we did. Milk powder, one product. Company, one company. Fonterra, one market, China. New Zealanders were warned by some of us that that was never going to be a good long-term strategy when you needed massive diversification. And here comes India, growing at almost 9% growth rate, and they will do year on year. They've got an exciting rise happening, and we have got there just in time to, my view, make the most of it in the next few years.
Just in terms of China and AUKUS Pillar 2, do you get the sense that China's just kind of watching this closely, or do you get the sense that there's actually quite a big concern with New Zealand engaging in this?
China has made public statements through their officials, they've made public statements through their official media wing about AUKUS and about what we should and should not be doing. We made it very clear to China we expect to be treated as an equal, as we treat small island nations as equal. We expect to be considered having a right to make our decisions about our long-term security, and that we do not think, and I actually put it to them, that some of our concerns can be conceived as being imaginary. They're not. We're realists. We've got our eyes wide open.
What do you mean by that exactly?
Well, We politely heard them out and said, you do not think, though, that we're just imagining what our concerns are, do you?
So you're talking about from a regional security perspective?
When I see the South China Sea, when I see the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea, when I see the changes there and the challenges and the contests going on in the South China Sea, we do not expect China to think that we are so bluff or ignorant as to not be making a sound case. We're saying to them, honour the law of the sea. And so when those matters were there, we have raised them. I raised with them the question of the Uyghurs and their fundamental rights. We didn't shrink from saying that, and at least they heard us out.
How would you characterise the relationship with China at the moment off the back of that visit?
Well, he was very, very pleased to have come here. He seriously enjoyed the visit and the conversations with my colleague Todd McClay and also the Prime Minister, and he asked me to come to China as soon as I could.
That was the Foreign Minister and Deputy Prime Minister Winston Peters, and that was Focus on Politics. I'm Jo Moir. Thank you for joining me. Mā te wā.